Hello, welcome to the Lately in JavaScript podcast hangout. This is episode 41, and as always, I have here with me Artur Sosin. Hello, Artur, how are you doing?
Hello, I'm fine, thank you.
That's good. That's always good to know. And this month, guess what? We have JavaScript topics to talk about. Lots of them. So let's get started with this. And first, I would like to comment on something that it seems to be the latest fashion on the web, which is those automatic scrolling things. Pages that show different things as you scroll over them, and they also implement animations, lots of effects, and in this case, this is implemented with a library named ScrollMagic. It is interesting that it implements some animations, but I don't know. For now, this is still a more or less a new thing. Scrolling as you scroll, it can show different things on the background, animations and stuff. I just wonder how long until people will get bored of these magic scrolling things. Artur, what do you think? I suspect that probably in a few months or so, nobody will be doing scroll hijacking sites like somebody calling it.
I remember when I think Nike was first to implement the parallax scrolling, and I was still in a web dev business in that time, and every client that came next to me always wanted something like a parallax scrolling to them. But eventually, that will, in most cases, only slow down the website or make it more unusable. And now, with the era of mobile devices, it's basically something that you should not implement in regular websites, only maybe some promo pages or something like that.
Right. I think once in a while we have something that is on fashion. it's a bit cool in the beginning because this is new. Wow, this is a new effect. And after a while, people start getting bored of things like this because it's no longer new. All the sites are using it, or at least many sites are using it. I don't know. By the way, this time we have a guest, Christopher. Hello, Christopher. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you.
Yeah. What do you think about this scroll hijacking websites? Do you like them, or what do you think?
I actually haven't heard about them. I just jumped into the call now.
You have not seen too many times.
No.
Right. Well, but I think you'll find plenty of.
You're referring to infinite scrolling?
Yeah. Yeah. It's basically while you scroll over the page, it starts showing you different things like scrolling backgrounds with parallax effects and things. I've seen quite a few, and I already have seen people also complaining about the abuse of these effects, because you can see scroll things on the background, and if you want to see more things, you have to scroll a lot. And as Arkansas was saying, I don't know how this would work in mobile phones.
But basically, the main rule would be not to play with the standard user input, the way they get used to use controls and scrolling. And this kind of library could be maybe great for presentation or something like that, but for real website, I really doubt it.
Yeah, this is yet another cool new effect that soon will no longer be new, and people will get bored with it, and everybody starts insulting whoever implements this thing on sites. Well, that's my prediction. I'm not sure if that's what is going to happen, but it's just a guess. Okay, but moving on with the hangout, let's talk about the next topic, which is share the screen again here. Probably I need to increase the font and then sharing the screen so you can see it too. It's the file system object JS. Basically, this is a library that allows you to emulate a file system that you can create, write files, read files on your browser. So if you need for some reason to store files that would be probably faster to read from your browser because they are already on the browser side and you do not need to access a remote server, this seems to be interesting. Probably very useful for offline applications. I don't know what was the main purpose of this, but it seems to allow people to create, I would say, a temporary storage. Probably it's a large file that gets stored on browser side, and inside it contains the data from all files that you create with it. I wonder if this would allow also to load JavaScript dynamically. It probably would be useful because it would be much faster.
But that could be done probably only through Evo evaluating.
Oh, Evo. I understood Evo. Well, some people say that Evo is evil.
It is. But it is.
Yeah, but what would be the alternative to using Evo for loading code dynamically that you probably only get into a string of a variable or something? I don't know if there is an alternative. This would be, anyway, it would be a special case. And I think we mentioned in a previous episode solutions to load JavaScript from local storage. So basically, this wouldn't be different. Well, personally, I do not have exactly an application for this, but I think those applications that would be able to run offline, like when the user loses the internet connection, would probably be very useful. I don't know, Arthur, did you ever develop any application that would run offline, or at least would not be stopped if you lose an internet connection?
Well, not really, but that actually could be quite interesting. You would need to put, I don't know, one check to check with the server and see if anything was changed, and if your application is pure HTML, JavaScript, so you can basically cache it all locally. And I think it should probably accept also binary files, so you could save images and stuff like that. So the whole website, if it's pure HTML, you can save it and run locally. Yeah, that's kind of great.
Yeah. Then you can play Angry Birds totally offline.
I actually had a class, webinars, right. If you remember, a JS classes, and so something like that could actually benefit from it and save all the notes locally and run offline. That could be useful,
But I guess nowadays the Google Docs is able to run totally offline.
Really?
Because in the past, when you used to change, for instance, parts of the document, you would try to save it immediately. And if you were not really online, it would probably get stuck and you could not do any work. And it seems that nowadays they have made it somehow that it changed save any changes later when the internet connection returns. So libraries like this probably can help when you have your application thought in terms of files, like pulling data using an AJAX request would be like pulling data from a file. And if that file is on local storage, it could be, read or written to it while the connection is not available, and then later when the connection attempts it to flush, it changes it to the server. Well, that's one idea.
Well, I think the main, the most interesting thing about this library is that while underneath you probably have one single blob, it virtually divides it in files and maps, and so you can access that in some structured way. So that I think was worth to mention. Yeah.
Right. The important thing is probably that it makes it simple for developers to think in terms of files, because using local storage you could always do that, like storing data values. Okay. Now moving on to the next topic, on which you comment something that was announced recently, collaboration between Mozilla and Unity to bring Unity game engine to work on WebGL. Well, as long as your browser is WebGL enabled, you could eventually develop games using this game engine, using the Unity tools, and you wouldn't need a plugin to implement something more native. This is interesting. Arthur, you develop your own games, right?
Yeah.
So what do you think, being a professional of this field of game development?
Well, running games on WebGL is not something so innovative, because, well, as we did previous podcast, we played Quake in the browser that's basically was running on WebGL, and I think that every MScript and translated program is basically translates OpenGL to WebGL, and that is how it managed to run it in the browser. But in Unity case, there was always a Unity web player, which was some kind of environment like Flash for Adobe or something like that, which also required an external plugin. And so now they decided to cooperate to enable Unity to export to pure HTML5 and WebGL, so it could run in the browser, as you said, without any plugins. So that's basically what this post is about. They are not first to do that, but since Unity is the most popular basic engine to use for game development, that will enable lots of people to play pretty cool games in the browser without any plugins.
Right. I think that the idea is also to take advantage of the game development tools that Unity provides. It's not just the engine; it's also the editors for creating game scenes and game objects and game logic. And I think the web browser became an additional target, besides other targets that the Unity tools support, like native games for Windows or for Android or iOS. And now I suppose this means that they are working on making it the web, HTML5 and WebGL enabled browsers to be another target for games. And this seems to be great, because it makes the lives of developers simpler in terms of the effort that they need to do to adapt their games to different platforms. Okay, now moving on to another topic. This one is somewhat unusual. Let me think about font here, share screen, or else nobody see what I'm talking about. This is Browserify. I have to confess I have not tried it in practice, so I'm not really sure if this is what I think it is. It's basically, it allows to run a sort of Unix-like tools on the browser. So instead of, for instance, you can run Node.js on the browser, because you'll be having access to a sort of a shell, and you can execute commands that would work usually in Unix shells like Node.js.
Yeah.
And well, I'm not sure if this is the right interpretation. Artus, did you take a look into this?
As I understood that basically Node.js is a server side, like a language meant to be run on the server side. And what Browserify does, it allows you to run it locally in your browser. So basically it transfers from your computer or your remote server to test it and run it in plain in the browser. It emulates the server environment.
Right. Well, I just wonder how was this done. Was it yet another MScript and port of a Unix shell?
No. I really doubt it.
How did they emulate the whole system of Unix that usually Node.js relies?
Have you heard of Browser Link or Test Link? That's basically a startup that provides running virtual machines in the browser. And how they do it, basically they create a socket connections to a virtual machine and render it in the browser. So
it's not really running on the browser, it's just a connection to something remote.
In their case, yes. In this case, I really don't know. I have not seen the code, but it could be something like that.
What about you, Christopher? Do you have any idea if you heard about Browserify before?
No, but it looks interesting.
Yeah, you can do some different things because you usually think about Node.js and every other application about Node.js to something that relies on a server, and if you can run independently on the browser, that opens space for lots of new types of applications. I don't know. I have not even thought about the possibilities. But so this is interesting. Well, anyway, moving on to the next topic here. This time we're going to talk about a tool that called JS Critic. Where am I? I shared the wrong screen. It's not Skype. what is it? Oh, it's minimized. That's why I was not seeing it. Googling out. Okay, here it goes. JS Critic. I don't know if I can increase the font. Okay, I think I can. So basically, this is a. It seems to be a wrapper around JS Hint. JS Hint is a tool for parsing and validating JavaScript code, so you can test it. And JS Hint is also a tool that you can run online. Or probably, I don't know, I'm not sure. I usually use it online, so I'm not sure if this is one of those tools that you can also download and use it locally. But in this case, they are calling the JS Hint from this JS Critic site, and it provides a summary of your code. So on this left side, I have here some code that I already pasted before this thing out, so I could try to see what happens. Here on the right side, it provides a summary of things that issues that you could have. It talks about here about things that your code could be doing, and also summary of complaints like global variables and used variables. And this is interesting because I have passed this code already in JS Hint, and for some reason I did not see this global variable declaration here. That is probably a bug, because I do not recall making any variables global in my library.
Where it is defined.
Yeah, I need to check. Now I need to bug fix my own code. And it also talks about the new variables, but this is a bug in JS Hint, I think, because I looked at it, these are variables in... actually, it's complaining about values that are not variables. These are parameters passed to functions, and in this case, this family parameter, remember that is a parameter passed by callback to a networking function, and probably a name DNS call, and if the family will be, if it is IPv4 or IPv6. And since internally the function does not use this parameter, it's complained about it as a new variable. So I think it is a bug in JS Hint, not necessarily a bug in your code, but I'll need to take a look at it later. Anyway, the idea is just to mention that there is this tool, and it's probably useful to make a summary of the complaints. Do you guys use any of these tools, JS Hint, JS Link, to validate your code?
Yes, JS Hint is available in brackets, Adobe brackets, which I'm using now. So,
oh, really?
Nice. It gives you real-time feedback.
Yeah.
And also, this could be useful if you find some like jQuery plugin or something, right? And you want to kind of, know if it's like recent, if it's been recently maintained in GitHub, or if it's a dead project. If you're going to see a lot of
old code. You can always use this to check if the quality of the code without spending too much time looking at the code. You just get a summary of the complaints and see how good is the programming, even without looking at the code, just seeing the complaints.
You can implement it in JS classes.
Yeah. Well, I can implement many things in JS classes. One thing that would be even more useful than this is just to code coloring, because that is available on PHP classes, because PHP has a built-in function to do it, but not for JS, not for JavaScript. So I could either use one of the existing libraries or probably develop one of my own to color the code. So that would be something that I wanted to do before even do things like this to integrate with JS Lint or JS Hint. And, well, anyway, talking about this, one thing that I've been planning, so, meaning that it will be done sooner or later, is to expose an API so third parties can develop applications that could somehow provide additional features on the site, somewhat like you have in Facebook. Loads of applications that provide additional functionality to the whole site, and maybe an integration with the JS Hint, JS Link could be provided by a third party. That is something that I'm still thinking about it. I don't have I do not have any work in progress. It's just something that I've been planning. I don't know when I will implement it, but I certainly want to do it, because we all know all sites that have provided APIs enable third-party developers to provide applications that somehow increase the value of the sites to the users. Well, but that was just a side comment related with the JS Cricket site, tool here. And so now let's move on to the next topic, which is also related with another thing that is somewhat unusual. At least I have not seen anything like this before. There is this library, macio.js, which is basically, in the case of the JavaScript implementation that they are mentioning here, a solution to use the audio PI to create some noise that could be used to transmit data on the top of some sound that it would transmit over the computer or whatever is your device, headphones or whatever is outputting audio. And on the other hand, a microphone would capture that audio and would extract the data from the audio. And this means that audio could be used to transmit data between two different devices. Well, this is not exactly new. This is how the modems based on phone lines used to work, at least in the dial-up days. And the advantage here is because that you don't need a phone line, you just need two devices being close enough to one to listen to the audio that the other produces, and also be able to also produce audio to transmit to the other device. I don't know if you guys have taken a look at this. It seems to be very advanced. What do you think about this idea?
Well, I have a radio-controlled helicopter. I think it's called HeloTC, and it can be also controlled from a mobile phone. And how they achieve it is exactly like that. They put a cable in a audio port and connect it to a remote control that way. So basically what I do on the phone is translated through audio signal to the remote control, and remote control sends the signal to the helicopter. So with this library, I think it would be also possible to control this helicopter from a web browser.
Right. So that would be a cool idea. And what is the speed of data transmission that you can get from audio modulation?
I don't know. It's kind of hard to assess that because you know, like helicopter, when you're controlling it, the controls are always delayed. There is an inertia, there is something like that, so I can't really understand how fast he reacts. But well, it's controllable, it's playable, so it's not that bad. And probably there is a reason why they chose it over Bluetooth or Wi-Fi, maybe because almost all phones have an audio port or something like that. But
maybe because you don't have an internet connection there.
Well,
it seems interesting, but if you say there is a noticeable delay, it's probably because the speed is not a big deal, but just for transmitting small amounts of data just to send controls to the device, and it probably is smart enough to establish some secure channel, or else somebody could interfere with your helicopter. Somebody else with another mobile phone could use the same software to steal your helicopter. You no longer would control it.
Well, it's probably somehow attached to the remote control. They probably identify each other somehow. I don't know.
It probably establishes a SSL connection with the...
I think we'll get to that later, right?
Well, I never know if you already have a sort of socket communication over audio. It's always possible to go further and implement real security, right? Well, now we are going to talk about, well, I think we have talked about JavaScript interpreters before, I'm not sure. I think yes, if I'm not mistaken. In this case, it's TinyJS. It's at least partially implemented interpreter of JavaScript written in JavaScript. So you can give it some JavaScript code and it interprets it. I did not try it, and there is no demo here that could be used to show something in practice.
I think there are. There is a demo folder, as I see.
Yes, there was a demo folder, but then you look at some code and say, what? Oh.
Yeah, true. there could be more description.
There could be somehow some demo what you can do with a JavaScript interpreter in JavaScript. I don't know. Yeah, maybe you can run some code inside of a sandbox or something. I don't know. This could be useful probably to implement a JavaScript debugger in JavaScript. Well, but I think we already have that in browser, right? Well,
yeah.
I'm not sure. But, well, this is just to mention about this library. Anybody interested in interpreters can take a look. And talking about this, we're going to move on to the next topic on which I'm going to comment about something that apparently has nothing to do with JavaScript. This is more a PHP thing. Facebook has been developing a new language called Hack. It is basically an evolution of PHP. It provides many new constructs and forms of programming. And the reason why I'm mentioning it here is because it provides some form of asynchronous programming. What makes this worth mentioning it here is because they did it in a way that, at least in my opinion, I think it is more sane, I would say, than the traditional callback based programming or based on promises, or which is always callback based for me, but okay. And the way they do it, they implemented this async keyword that you can assign to functions. That to tell that it can be run synchronously, and also there is this await keyword here. This means that the code that is in front will run, and it will the execution will only proceed to the rest of the code after when this function here returns, even if it is doing something asynchronous, like waiting for some I/O, some network connections, or anything that could be asynchronous. And at least for me, this is more usable to for programmers that need to develop applications that execute asynchronous operations. For instance, if you need to send an AJAX request to some server, and you need to process the response, you don't no longer need to put it in a callback, and this makes the lives of developers much easier, because sometimes this asynchronous programming is done inside of loops and conditional code, and you don't need to go through hacks of nested callbacks and callbacks recursively to deal with all the complexity of asynchronous programming. And I don't know if you guys have seen this. What do you think? Do you think it will be simpler to do asynchronous programming? Or maybe you were not caring so much about asynchronous programming.
Well,
it's like the when done construct, no? In the jQuery.
Yeah.
When like you said, when you do a get in, or a, something in AJAX, and then you say done.
Yeah, but what about if you are in a loop? Can you break out of the loop depending on the result of the synchronous code? I don't know. I think JavaScript is sort of limited in that sense. Yeah. And this ties to the next topic that I was going to talk about. But Arthur, so you are going to say something?
No, nothing.
Yeah, because the next topic, actually, this time more related with JavaScript, is about an article actually that I wrote about a library for validating email addresses. So what this library does is you pass an email address to it, and there is some code, some example code here, and there are some parameters they can configure. And then you pass a callback. And this is the simplified view of validating emails in with this library, because inside the library itself, it does many operations that are synchronous, like sending requests to the DNS to resolve domains, to see what is the IP address of a certain domain, if it resolves, if it exists, to also get the host name of a certain IP address, because that is used to match certain email servers' addresses to see if they are present in a blacklist that is used by this library to see if the domain should be, I mean, the email address should be acceptable or not. And just to give a brief overview about the types of invalid domains that it can detect, it can detect typing mistakes. For instance, somebody types Yahoo with just a single O, and this is a very frequent mistake, because people are in a rush and forget to type a letter or type a letter in the wrong order, like typing hot Mali instead of hotmail. So this package can take a look at some configuration files with common mistakes, and it can suggest fixes. So this works like the did you mean feature of search engines. When you type something incorrectly, it assumes that you probably meant something else and suggests a fix. And that's the title of the article, did you mean advanced mail validation using Node.js in this case. And another type of invalid address, and when you use fake domains, like somebody is registering on a site and doesn't want to provide a valid email address, and for some reason does not trust the site or something, and puts domains like foo.org that does not exist, or it's probably an inactive domain. It also looks in a configuration file for these domains. Another thing is that are those temporary domains like noip.com that allow you to create email addresses, but they will only be valid for a while the user is using the service. Probably if you have a site that you want your users to register, probably not a good idea to accept email addresses based on those domains, because the users may not be reachable later if they stop using those temporary domains. Then there are disposable mailboxes, which is also the case of users that don't want to register to a site because they do not trust the site for some reason. So they go to some site like Mailinator or something like that and create fake addresses, or I mean addresses that they will really not be looking at later for the message that you may send to them. So it's also not a good idea for a site to accept registration with these email addresses.
But how can you actually know if it's a disposable or if it's a normal address?
That's because there is a configuration file that has already listed some known disposable email addresses. It's not that it, the package is smart enough to guess that some email address is disposable. There are some configuration files in CSV format that you can edit, and as you realize there are certain addresses that are disposable mailboxes, you can put the domains of those addresses in those configuration files, and that will allow the package here to detect the email as invalid. And the same goes for spam traps. This is a less common thing, but they exist. There are those there are domains that they are fake. But if you send emails to messages to those emails with those spam trap domains, they'll trigger actually trap, and will have you the mail server that sent the message to a blacklist. That's why it is a trap. And this is used to spread some fake email addresses put on pages, so those spammers that they are harvesting email addresses scrolling pages will get caught later. And but if you have a regular site, you are not a spammer, you are not doing anything wrong. It is not a good idea to accept registrations from users that provide spam traps, because they're probably being malicious. They're trying to get your site being blacklisted, and so it is a good idea to also reject non-spam traps. It is impossible, again, to know all the spam traps that exist in the world, but if you find some common spam trap domains, you can add it to the blacklist, and it allows this package to detect earlier any invalid addresses that are being just used by spam traps. And rejecting servers are those servers that probably are regular email servers of certain domains, but for some reason you have a problem in your server. It has been added to some blacklist, probably by some mistake or something wrong that you did. Send email that was considered to be spam. They start rejecting emails. So this package attempts to send a message to the SCMTP server, and if the message is bounced, is rejected, it will tell that the email address supplied is to be considered invalid, because even if it looks valid, your server will not be able to send the message to it, because it will be rejected. And finally, one case, this is more, it's not really permanently invalid addresses, but a temporary case, like for instance when the user has a mailbox that is full, if you send a message to it, it will be rejected for a while by the server, but it issues a temporary status code. This means that your server may try it later. This may work with mailboxes that are full. Maybe the user goes there and cleans up some messages to make some space, and your message can be received. But it can also be be used with the gray lists. Gray lists are servers that know that spammers, when they try to send messages, they only try once. And but the regular mail servers keep message in the queue and try it later. So when you send a message to a server that uses a gray list, the message is temporarily rejected, but it will be accepted later. So it may be the case when this package is testing a mail address, it may stumble into a server that uses a gray list, and you cannot consider it invalid. So there is a third status code that this package returns, which is not being valid or invalid. It's undetermined. And in your application, you should consider undetermined email address as valid, because they, it can be just a temporary situation. Well, anyway, these are just the types of possible invalid email addresses that this package can detect. Basically, this package is a port of another package written in PHP many years ago. And the biggest difference, and that's why it was related to the previous topic, is that using Node.js, many of these operations to connect to SMTP servers or DNS servers, they are asynchronous. The way you deal with asynchronous operations with Node.js, it's makes it very complicated. Okay, it was possible to implement all the logic that was implemented on the PHP code, the PHP class version. But what is being done here? Is that all done in Node.js requires a lot of callback logic. And well, in my experience, it was a pain. Christopher, I'll mute you for a moment. So your feedback, your audio doesn't get back to the podcast. Well, anyway. This package is useful for these purposes of validating email addresses. It does not fully resolve all possible cases of invalid email addresses, because some servers, you can send a message to them and then they do not tell you immediately if the email address is invalid. They can bounce it later, so you have to have a different solution for ending this case. For instance, you can make the bounced message go to some address and then process the bounces somehow to determine the address that bounced and determine that it was invalid. But in this case, it is not done in with this package. You would have to use some other solution. And as I mentioned before, this is a package. There's another package written in PHP. So if you need a PHP solution instead of a Node.js-based solution, you can look at this. This class mentioned here, and there is a similar article to this also in the PHP class site where this PHP class version is hosted. And finally, if you need to register users, there is a faster way to do it, including getting the user email address, which is to use the OAuth protocol to integrate with some social network like Facebook, or get have access with the user permission to the Google account of the user, and with a few clicks, your site can get all the data about the user that you need, again with the user permission, like the username and the email address and other details that you may need. And this way, you do not have to go through the whole email validation process. Well, anyway, this is a sort of not so brief explanation about this package. I mean, this article that talks about this package. I don't know if you guys have done any email validation in the past. Yeah. I wonder what you think about the solution? Is it too complex or solve a pain? What is your opinion?
I basically have two comments to. First is actually, wow, you could really try to sell it as a service. It sounds really impressive, and yes, handling with emails is actually such a pain, and such a service could be something that is up the task. And the second comment was about the async programming that we were talking before, and with the hack. Basically, I see where you are going for that. Actually, if you want to provide an interface that a function that returns some kind of result, and in the meantime you want to leverage the async calls internally in the library, that the way that hack provides it is actually quite great way to handle it. So if something like that, like wait function.
Well, I think I have to say that I was talking about hack, but it doesn't. I have not tried it in practice because it's not yet a mature project that it can be easily built on different platforms. And at least I use OpenSUSE Linux for building it, and I sort of gave up is requesting too many packages that either I did not have, or when I tried to install them, it did not recognize the right version, so it was a sort of a pain. So I don't know yet how ACK is being perceived. I mean, how if it will be as easy as it seems. I think so, and I think it was something that they have been asking for many times. I think there should be a simpler way to do synchronous programming. You can still have all the callback logic, but if you need to wait for some asynchronous operation to finish, you do not have to go through loops, through lots of callbacks and tricks. For instance, in the case of this package, probably it's more interesting than talking is to show some code. Here in getcritic, and jscritic, I actually, the code that I pasted here is the actual Node.js email validation. And what happens here, for instance, if you want to simulate the delivery of a message to a certain email address that is served by a certain domain, it can already get complex because some domain can have multiple SCMTP servers. So you have to do some callbacks. To first resolve the MX record for that domain, and that's okay, that's just a single callback, and then it returns several SMTP servers, and then you need to validate the email servers one by one. You have to attempt to send a message to each of them. Because if you try the first and it fails, you need to skip to the next. And this was really, really complicated because I have to, probably I'm not showing it correctly here because the code is somehow long. There's a lot of indenting here. Let me open an editor here and show it in the editor. Okay. Let me paste it here. Where is this? Okay. Now switching the screen sharing. And this is gets so complicated because let me increase the font here. Okay, I think you can read it here. When you go to the validate email server function. Okay, validate email server function. You can see that this already gets very complex because does some DNS lookups, and then you have to put a callback function here to process the rest of the code. And then since you have to go through a loop, a list of servers, when you want to skip to the next server, you have to call the function itself, advancing one position in the list of servers. And this is the solution that I found. I found it very ugly, but I don't know if this is a better solution to iterate over an array of entries that need to process things asynchronously. And also the to return results, you also have to do it asynchronously. And you have to call callbacks to call the callback function that the user, the programmer passed to it. And
recursive callback, actually, also.
Oh, it's... I don't know. If you have a list of many entries in an array, I probably need to blow up a stack because you cannot call too many functions recursively. There should be some limits. I don't know how JavaScript handles it nowadays. But for a small number of entries in an array, it's, I suppose it shouldn't be a big deal. Well, anyway, all this to say that the way it is in Node.js is very complicated, and the Node.js developers refuse to provide less painful solutions. I don't know if it was the lack of knowledge about possible solutions like the X language provides, or just because they are against the principles of making things look synchronous. Well, I don't know. Probably don't want to get too much into that discussion. I wonder, Christopher, what do you think? I don't know if you can.
You need to unmute him.
Yeah. Well, I was curious about benchmarking. I mean, if you throw like 5,000 email addresses, what would the through rate be with the node solution versus the PHP?
Yeah, well, I don't know if it will make any difference because most of the things that take a long time are networking communications, mm-hmm. so it does not depend so much on the language because most of the time it will be waiting for the DNS or this SMTP server to respond. So I think in terms of performance, probably it will not make a big difference.
And can you cache the results, like once you verify that the domain is valid?
Yeah, I internally I do some caching because I was not thinking validating many addresses because mm-hmm. the idea was not to make it the life easier to spammers that want to do some cleansing on their thousands of addresses. But unfortunately, well. It's like a knife. It could be used for good purposes, but there will always be people trying to use it for bad purposes. Now that you mentioned that, I also want to comment that despite the class package can detect, for instance, disposable email addresses, the CSV file with that could have disposable non-disposable email domains. On purpose it is empty because I do not want to help spammers to clean their stuff. But it's not hard to figure the most important disposable email address. You just go on Google and add them, and then you can add them manually to your configuration.
Which you have to maintain.
But the basic, yeah. Right, but well, there are always new disposable email domains like every month or every week because once one starts being detected, the people that tend to use those disposable email addresses will skip to the next, and they keep adding new domains, and adding a new domain to the same disposable email address system will still be caught by this class because it can head to the blacklist the IP addresses to which the SCMTP server will resolve. So even if you change the email disposable email address domain, it will still resolve to the same SMTP server, and this package can get it. But the idea was not so much to upset people that use disposable email addresses. It was to avoid that disposable email addresses be cluttering the databases of your sites, because after a while, if you have many users with disposable email addresses in your in your service, if you are sending those letters to them, you are wasting bandwidth and the CPU resources sending newsletters to people that will not be receiving those messages. But that's just one aspect that I explained in the article. The idea is not to upset the people that use disposable email addresses, but they have to understand that there are reasons for sites to not accept them. And well, okay, well, basically I've already talked about this topic. We need to move on another topic. Actually, we reached this regular section on which we comment on the Innovation Award nominees. In this case, we'll talk about the nominees of January. Unfortunately, there are not many, basically only two. Artus, which one would you like to comment?
Okay, let me comment on, let me screen share first. Let me comment on the Obfuscator. It's a package created by Dixon Santi Esteban, I hope I pronounced it right, which this package can take obfuscated JavaScript code or even PHP code and make it more readable. As you see, there is example, basically where you have everything in one line, all spaces removed and stuff like that, and you can then make it more readable, like in with the new lines with in the text indentation. Of course, it can't give a more meaningful variable names like it could have and make code readable in such way, but still it's kind of makes it easier to skim through the text and see what is there. You can distinct different functions and scopes, and I even put it in JS Critic and see that it's does not do anything malicious or bad.
Now I like the tool.
Sure, why not?
Yeah.
So basically, that's what it does, and it does it great, and it's actually quite small, as I checked it.
Yeah, it could be an eventual improvement, or at least an idea for a new innovative package, not only to deobfuscate the code, but also change the names of the variables, because most obfuscators also change the names of the variables to something that is less meaningful and probably not very useful. But okay. The suggestion is there for whoever can come up with a solution like that. So, moving on my part, I'd like to comment on the other package, which is Node and Map. Basically, this is a wrapper around the Nmap tool. This one was written by Jason Gerfen from the United States. And he developed a package that is basically can call the Nmap program, and it can scan a network to find computers that are on the network. I don't know if it does any port scanning, because I think it's the main purpose of Nmap. And it's interesting because with this package, you can For instance, know what are the computers that are in your network and probably do something interesting with that. I don't know if you guys have tried. There are those applications for mobile phones like AirDroid or on the Android, and probably something else on iPhone that provides a similar thing, which is you can communicate with your mobile phone via your local Wi-Fi network, as long as you know the IP address of the the mobile phone, and I think probably with this tool you probably can tell which are the computers that are in your network. Although Node.js typically think something for a server side, it somehow could be used for that purpose. So kudos to Jason for this class. Unfortunately, this month we do not have many packages to talk about, but next month we have already many packages. Probably January was a slow month. There were not many innovative packages to talk about.
After New Year, of course, it was a slow month.
Yeah, people are still digesting all the food that they got in Christmas and in New Year, and that's why. So after that, only after that they start working. Here in Brazil, it's somewhat different because the year only starts after Carnival. Yes, that's a common joke that the Brazilians make about themselves, that the country sort of shuts down after Christmas. Everybody goes on vacation, and they only get started working after Carnival. So after Carnival, everybody says Happy New Year. It's like getting back to work. Enough vacations. So basically, we have ended this podcast. We cover many interesting topics, and it was great. And I'm left to thank you, Artus, for coming once again, and also Christopher. I can see that this time the invitations via Google Hangouts and Google Plus somehow work, because in previous months there is always some problem that prevents things to work, because the user that started the Hangout is different, the user that announced the event. And it's a bit confusing, but it was great to have you here, Christopher. So thank you again for your participation too.
You're welcome.
Okay. So on my behalf, that is all for now. Bye.
Bye. Bye.